I am what some would call hard on myself. Not in a unique way, or so my wife assures me, but in the white, American, Protestant, want to better myself kind of way. I think myself lucky that during the day there is no time for such thinking, such striving, the opportunity for recitations of small failures. No time for wondering how I could have done it better or be more, or fear how my children aren't doing everything all the time, or that they are, and the sin of that. No time to hurry grief, let alone grieve. No time to ritualize, let alone remember. No, these thoughts come at night. Come right as the body relaxes, right as the mind relinquishes its grip on the immediate needs, like someone kicking open an anthill of anxieties that had been meticulously built under the quiet ground for days. Now panic and flurry and directionless movement surfaced and unrestrained. It makes the winter hard. Not only because the night makes itself known before the day is done, and the body can anticipate the mind's habits as the sun tucks away, but also because accompanying these nightly hard and harsh mantras of imperfection, heaven forbid, is the promise of a new year, a new dawn, a new life. If only we resolve to do it better this time around. The spirituality of possibility, as this month's theme in this congregation calls us to consider, is tricky for those of us who are kept awake by life's unearthed anthills. A task? A goal? Sign me up! We took the Christmas tree to the curb on December 29th and would have sooner if we had been home the days following Christmas. Leaning his small body against our front room windows, 3-year-old Tobias now peers out at the browning tree. Once filled with light and shadowing his presence, he asks us why it's no longer in our home. Onward, I want to say. But don't, of course. I speak to him of life's cycles, of giving thanks for what we've used and loved, returning our tree to the earth where death is a transformation, life, new trees, next year's magic. There is a tension in this time of year that I have never felt as strongly as I do now, trying to parent a child who clings to the magic of long, dark nights and my own need to make use of time before it speaks to me of things gone wrong or left undone. I'm sure much of it is nature and much more of it is nurture. I was taught, and I imagine many of you were as well, to treat the new year, the invitation to consider all that is possible, as a challenge, a thing to be conquered, a self-perfection to catch, a reflection of how purposefully reflective I could be. How odd that is to say out loud. Knowing how the natural world has no suggestion of such urgency, no want for criticism or regret for what has been. By the earth's graceful teachings, we are invited in this season not to ramp up, but to slow down, to find home wherever we have come to be, to build comforts that not only sustain, but nurture. Think of the fire's warmth, but also the smell that elicits a homecoming. We're invited to let be what has been planted, what has grown, and what has been tilled. There is nothing more to do with the day's successes or misgivings when the night comes, the world teaches us. We must simply let the earth shy away from the sun, let the night animals have their time in the world, let the blessed be. This is not a season of moving, working, blooming, fruiting. the things we humans are told are important work. It is a wiser time of dreaming and waiting, of growing what will come to birth. Uncomfortable with the false suggestion of death, of nothingness in this wintered world, we have forced upon it further rituals of and work. And so I give to you the words of the Reverend Nadia Boltz-Weber, who I hold close and whose words I hold closer this week. There is no resolution that, if you kept, will make you more worthy of love. You, as your actual self, not as some made-up ideal self, are already worthy. Let me say that again in case you didn't quite believe it. There is no resolution that, if you kept, will make you more worthy of love. No type of work, no fewer belt holes, no amount of money, no partnership. You are already worthy. Now, we'll leave here today and be told otherwise. You'll see partnerships blooming that you will crave, things you want to purchase that for whatever reason you can't. You'll hear comments about people who look like you or love like you or move like you, and you can decide that they are right, that there is some deficit to your being, some something if you accomplished or worked harder at or threw to the birds would make you more right, more whole, more holy. They will be loud. They will be convincing. It's just, the thing is, resolutions, as they have been given to us, as they have been most commonly adopted, as they ring out throughout the year and not just in the times in which most of us feel the most vulnerable, they have been built around expectations of perfectionism, of someone else's definition of perfect, of white supremacy culture, of ableism, fat phobia, capitalism, and on it goes. That's not possibility. That's not the truth of our time on this earth. That is not the beautiful, miraculous authority of life moving through creation of which you and I are a part. Those voices, those expectations are a degradation, a quieting, a shaming of the spirit of life that exists already within each of us. A spirit that is perfect, that is also moving toward wholeness, that knows the magic of this time and that needs protection from our onward push. Can we risk thinking those voices are wrong? Can we forget for a moment what we've been taught to believe? Traveling the long shadows of winter, can we pour a cup of hot tea and pull up a chair and sit with ourselves long enough to discover who we really are? Come to know ourselves enough to decide what we think is worthy of our spirit's attention rather than the screaming of what we are not. Ask, as Margaret Wheatley writes, what is possible, not what's wrong, and then keep asking. And I would add, and then start from there. I say all of this to you knowing that for many of us, the idea of pulling up a chair of self-discovery could be a painful conversation and a time of jittery want to do rather than be. I'm the one who threw out the Christmas tree days after winter's arrival. I tell you here that I get it. There is something fragile-making in engagements that come in the cold. But part of the weaponry of this time that I seek to meet with peaceful refusal is the narrative that huge, transformative, life-bettering change will also show itself in easy fixes and provide some sort of immediate satisfaction. And then that feeling of immediate defeat when the slow growing takes time, how it draws us back to the heckles of resolve. Have you ever spent time with that word, resolve? Do you know what it means? To solve, to fix some issue, as if you and I are something irritating to mend. This year, I want to live in the time it takes, the season, the winter wilderness walks that can realign me with the world of which we are a part. Now, often on Sundays, I try to preach to you some grand gesture of what could be, what we can be. And then in the line, and I hear your thoughts thereafter, and they echo with me into the days to come. And too often I hear, but what does that actually look like? Well, that's nice, Kim, but how do I do that? Now, I don't know what this looks like for any one of you. I am just beginning to think about what it might look like for me, but I want to leave you with a meditation by Robert Folgman, who you might know his name from all the things I learned, or I know I learned in kindergarten. He's also a UU minister, and he writes The Chairmen. We say the young have much to learn, but I find they know and do things unfamiliar to me, so I am pleased to learn from them when I can. Example, he writes. Two young college men asked me for a ride because they were late to work. Their summer construction job was near my office, and so I gladly obliged. On the way, I asked, besides working hard and playing hard, what's happening in your lives? They exchanged glances. Then one said, we're eating a chair. What? Yes, it seems that their college philosophy teacher gave them an extra credit assignment. Do something unique and memorable, not dangerous or foolish, but something imaginative, inventive, and instructive. Write it up and explain what was learned and how it might apply to their philosophy of life. So they are eating a chair. They bought a plain wooden kitchen chair at an unfinished furniture store. Using a wood rasp, they have been shaving away at the chair, mixing the dust into their granola for breakfast, and sprinkling the dust on their salads at dinner. So far, they have consumed most of a leg, two rungs, and a back piece. And while they don't want to overdo it, the pace is picking up. Still, the project may not be finished before summer's end, so they may enlist friends who, it seems, are enthusiastically willing to help eat a chair. And yes, they consulted a physician to make sure the wood dust was not harmful, and no, it doesn't taste bad, especially if they mix in a little cinnamon at breakfast and a little lemon pepper at dinner. And yes, they have learned a few things along the way. Like what? Like how amazing long-term goals can be achieved in incremental stages. Like how something seemingly idiotic affects your thinking about how you do other things. For example, these two men run about 15 miles a week to stay in shape, around and around a lake. They wondered where 15 miles a week would take them if they ran in a straight line, so they got out a road map. And they've been marking the mileage headed south. They could be in Portland, Oregon in a couple of weeks, but that's boring. So they have a European map and are now starting out in Vienna headed toward Athens. Using guidebooks, they're figuring out what there is to see and do along the way. They're touring the world in their minds. And of course, they're very pleased with themselves. They're sure they'll astound the professor when he asks for their report. We ate a chair. It will blow the dude away, one said. For all the goofiness of the project, these young men are learning patience and perseverance. Some things cannot be had except on a little at a time, keep the long goal in mind, stay focused basis. Love and friendship are like that. Marriage and parenthood, too. And peace and justice and social change. As wonderfully silly as it seems, eating a chair may lead these young college friends to wisdom and nobler aspirations. In their foolishness lies the seed of what might be, little by little. So here's to a new year. Where in the dark of night and the beautiful cloak of winter, we may come to hear the echoes of something earthly, something true, something others would deem foolish to believe, but that we know that we are already loved and already enough, and we are already on our way. Blessed be. And amen.